Hi, this is Susie Quattro, and you are listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Martin Popoff here, back again for another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this vast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Simplecast, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right. This is an episode where it's an idea I've had for a while, and I might have, you know, I've probably mentioned it elliptically along the way and all, you know, somewhere along the previous 165 episodes, but I was just on with Pete Pardo, Sea of Tranquility. We were doing our weekly Friday at the Funhouse, and I don't know why it came up. It was kind of off topic, but then I noticed in the comments a few people said, hey, that's kind of a neat idea, so it kind of reminded me to cover this off fully. So the idea here, this is episode 166. I'm calling this Songs You Shouldn't Cover. Nice, simple concept here. And most of what we're going to talk about here is driving home a specific point. I'm going to use the first four slots to essentially make that point. And then I'm going to just flip it, and we're going to use the number five slot, basically talking about the complete opposite, where it's like, you should cover these songs, and here's kind of a good reason why it sort of worked out. So it's almost like we're gonna drive home the point by covering all bases, essentially the opposite, the polar opposite, as it were. The idea here is songs you shouldn't cover, but like I say, a specific way. So the ways I'm not gonna talk about these are, you know, should you cover big sort of monumental songs like Don McLean, American Pie? Should you cover artists that are super distinctive in what they do, and they're so soaked in the ownership of the song? Like, should you be covering Bruce Springsteen songs? Should you be covering U2 songs? You know, now we get into that whole, you know, how I've used that term, messianic, right? Should metal bands, for example, cover U2 songs? It seems like every time they do it, they come off sounding a little pretentious. You know, you think of that whole Queensryche take cover thing, where that whole thing felt a little pretentious because, you know, and Def Leppard's kind of like this a little bit as well. This idea that you know, you're too big for your britches, you know, you're not worthy to cover these songs, kind of thing. So I feel that there's these other reasons not to, you know, where it's ill-advised to be covering the songs. But again, we're going to drive home a certain point here with all four of these, the first four slots. So let's start with our first one. Take a listen to this. This is Uriah Heep with Gypsy.
Will she still be torn between her father and lover? One day I will go to him, strong enough to fight and win. The kind of a man that he'll understand.
Oh. All right. So I might have used Gypsy before to point out other examples of things. It possibly might have been in our Origins of Heavy Metal episode. But this is always, you know, how I always, you know, have to include in these things the first song that comes to mind when I think of a concept. So this is the first song that comes to mind for me like this. So the idea with this Songs You Shouldn't Cover situation is the following. You can never improve upon the original. That's essentially it. So the idea is that you listen to a song like Gypsy and you go, wow, you know, irrespective of it being 1970, which blows my mind, but the production is absolutely incredible on this. This band, on their first album, first songs, gets the whole Deep Purple, Ritchie Blackmore, John Lord alloy better than Deep Purple actually would ever get it, perhaps, you know, excepting the Machine Head album. But they do an amazing, amazing job. Massive, massive mic box guitars, and then the honking crazy, crazy organ on here as well. The drumming is incredible. The general frilliness of what's going on. And here's kind of the main point. When you look at the real skeleton of the song, there's not really much going on. The actual verse chords are not all that exciting. But you put David Byron up there, you put that strange arrangement where it stops and it's just like, you know, tapping the hi-hat sort of thing, and you hear the chords going and he sings, and then you get those big medieval stomps in it. You've got the intro, you've got the crazy musicality, almost like, you know, a wacky Vertigo Records, jazzy, acid rock, jam, heavy metal, progressive band on this thing. So the point is everything about the performance, the production, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, it is their own song. It's so historic in the invention of heavy metal being 1970 and sounding like this in 1970. These are all the reasons there's no point touching this song. You could cover it, you know, using Pro Tools and computers and triggers and Andy Sneap production. You know, we always complain about Andy Sneap, right? But you know, he's almost become this term for perfect modern productions, right? You could do all this, but you know that there'd be a whole ton of magic that would get lost along the way, and that's why you would never cover this song. And interesting, I wanted to mention with Heap, also this band is the king of the shuffles, right? So what I've noticed is when people cover Heap, or for that matter, ZZ Top type shuffles, sometimes the drummer will straighten out the shuffle or even kind of lazy out the shuffle and like turn it, you know, make it more of a bass drum snare combination rather than true shuffling. You know, the ways that Roger Earl or Lee Kerslake or Frank Beard would do it, where you'd maybe get a little bit of kind of roiling snare drum grace notes in there and stuff like that. You know, a proper true shuffle on the hi-hat, it's kind of hard to do, to get a real groove going on a shuffle. So when you hear bands cover the Uriah Heep shuffles, it doesn't particularly sound great either. It loses that atmosphere. And another one, well, this is another reason, you know, Pete and I were talking about our favorite bands by, so it was the episode about, you know, should you, are the hits the greatest songs, blah, blah, blah. We won't get into that. But, you know, for examples, we picked our favorite Heap songs. We both actually, I think, had Shadows of Grief in our list. And again, that is a song on Look at Yourself where the performance is so dynamic and proggy and tasteful, but yet large and complicated. But when you listen to the way, that one's got a little more complication to it than Gypsy does. But again, it's the whole enveloping of this band firing on all cylinders. It's only a year later for them, 1971, with that great David Byron vocal on top and the amazing, amazing dialed in Jerry Braun sounds. You know, just lots of bass, lots of treble, lots of everything, just super dynamic. And then all the little progressive parts, which again, you know, I maintain that on that first album here and there, but on the third album, definitely, not so much on Salisbury, and somewhat on the two big ones, Demons and Wizards and Magician's Birthday, and definitely on Sweet Freedom as well. These guys kind of get that magic of Deep Purple better than Deep Purple gets it in a lot of cases, which is kind of interesting. Perhaps not so consistently in the songwriting, but definitely in the production and that. So again, I guess the idea here is that even if the songwriting is pulled back a little bit, the performance can make a song untouchable as a cover. No one could ever improve on Shadows of Grief. That's my point. But yeah, Easy Livin', I guess Angel Dust covered Easy Livin', The Dickies, Wasp. You know, there's no significant covers of Gypsy, which is kind of interesting and kind of proves my point. And, you know, I wanted to mention another one that, you know, we could do a whole episode on this. I don't think I have, but, you know, the idea of how Iron Maiden was the first band to really pick covers the way a heavy metal fan would pick covers. And then Metallica did kind of the same thing. And a lot of Metallica's covers don't improve on the originals, because they put in that kind of simple, oppressive, thrashy Metallica heavy metalness. Bread Fan's a perfect example. You can't really improve on that Bread Fan budgie performance. But Maiden, because there's just this kind of extra cool dynamic to their to what they do. There's an interesting example that is kind of like one of one side of the story versus the other side of the story, and that's I've Got the Fire, Montrose. That is an absolutely exalted performance and production. Everything on there, Ronnie Montrose and the Electric Bill Church and Denny and Bill's gone by that album. That's right. He's on the demos, I think, is the way that works. But anyways, Sammy Hagar, of course, singing up a storm on that song. But the groove, everything about it is so perfectly done. But so that is a song that I would generally say like Gypsy is untouchable. But Maiden actually rises to the challenge, and because it's that classic Maiden lineup, Bruce is coming in, he's got something to prove. They just do an incredible version of the song. So there's an example of a song that I would generally say is untouchable. Don't do it. Ill-advised. Your version will be worse than the original. Maiden pretty much captures the same magic as the original. All right, let's move on to our second selection. Take a listen to this. This is Ram Jam with Gone Wild. Okay, so exact same point I'm going to make here, but there's an actual added dimension to this Ram Jam situation. So this record, this is off of Portrait of the Artist as a Young Ram. This is that album I did an entire I did an entire episode on, because the whole story of it just blows me away. Go listen to that. It's one of the most interesting episodes of the 166 so far. But the point here is that there are other songs on that album that are much more modern heavy metal, almost Judas Priest-like, but yet this song is actually a little more dated. It could have even fit on the self-titled debut. It's got a little boogie-woogie to it, but the point is the performance of this song is so over the top and hoodlum rock and bush party and just rowdy and drinking that it actually is my favorite song on the whole album. And this is the magic of performance. So you just hear the way the production is. It's so noisy and mid-rangey, and the guitars are screeching, and Mike Scavone is in there, just kind of sounding like a bad dude from the streets kind of thing. And everything about this song just like sounds like a crazy Friday night getting ready to go out and break things party song. And that's it. Like I say, it drives home the point, because there are other songs on here. There's actually other, so here's kind of the point with this song, Untouchable, don't cover it, your version will be worse than theirs. There are other songs on this album, because the production of the album in general, this rowdy, screechy, mid-rangey, frantic production doesn't really work as well for some of the other songs. It works pretty well because it's an amazing, amazing album. It's one of the heaviest albums of the 70s, and oddly enough, it's from an American band, and it's not even an early new wave of British heavy metal situation like, the Motorhead albums or Samson or things like that, Saxon. So that's kind of interesting. Heavy Load is kind of, I guess a Swedish version of new wave of British heavy metal. But there are some really heavy songs on here that I would say go ahead and try cover them, because they are modern enough that you could do a good job. And if you are a band with a lot of chemistry and good recording, this is, frankly, there's like three or four songs on here it would have been amazing to hear Maiden cover in 1982 or 1983 or 1984. This is a 1978 album, right? So there you go. That really drives home the point too. And I think I'll just mention here as well that Ram Jam is super famous for Black Betty. Now, Black Betty is a traditional song that that essentially, I guess the most famous version is Ledbetter. But what they do with this is what Zeppelin and Cactus and all those bands did with taking old blues songs and add a whole bunch of frilliness and dynamic performance and production to them. So Black Betty turns out to be a song that was a good idea to cover. It's obviously their only hit. They only made two albums, and they had a huge hit with this song, and you still hear Black Betty all the time. But the point is, in this situation, it's worth covering because the bare bones of it are so simple, and yet they noticed the magic in it. And then they added a bunch of heavy metal riffs and things to it, and the crazy drum breaks and all that stuff, which made it really good. So that's kind of not a song you shouldn't cover, but a song that they realized that there was some magic in there and made it worth covering. All right, this episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help, or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And special offer to History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff listeners. You can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/5songs. That's better, HELP.com/5songs. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. All right. Let's move on to our third selection, and we'll make a slightly different point with this one. Pretty interesting here. Take a listen. This is Status Quo with Backwater. All right, so this is, wow. So I have often said, and I'm pleased to be able to play this. I've probably played this before in some previous episode, because what you just heard is probably my favorite 30 seconds of music by anybody ever. It's the most magical hard rock moment I can think of. And so this is the first song on the Great Quo album, my favorite Status Quo album. This is the Frantic Four lineup. And, you know, sadly, there's only one guy left alive from the Frantic Four lineup, and that's Francis. Everybody else is gone. You know, Rick Parfitt, Alan Lancaster, John Coughlin. But, yeah, Alan Lancaster vocal on this. So some of my favorite Quo songs have Alan singing, the bass player. I love his voice. I love his vocals. But yeah, I love the whole idea of when this song is just this big trundling heavy metal slash boogie song, you know, big stomping beat to it. It sounds like tanks rolling through the desert and all those other metaphors that I use. But it goes into this long guitar solo section, and then it comes out of this guitar solo section and blasts into another verse. And swear to God, it feels like, or maybe it's true, that it speeds up a tiny bit when it goes into this verse. I just love that feel. I just think it's one of the most heavy metal moments of all time, even though it's obviously, you know, old school dad rock, not particularly heavy metal, boogie rock, right? So my point I want to make here is that I love this magic moment of music so much, like I say, my favorite moment of music ever, that you know, even them on their legendary live album Live can't even recapture that moment, because they probably don't feel it the same way I do. I just played it just before we did this episode, and I noticed they kind of botch it. You know, they botch this magic moment. And the interesting thing is, I remember finding on YouTube once one other live performance where it's almost as cool as on the studio album. It's an outdoor show, and I could never find it again. But there's this outdoor show version where they're in front of some huge crowd. It's probably at some British festival. It's sunny out, you know, so it's daytime, and they break into this part, and it sounds as heroic as it does on the studio album. But my point here is, Status Quo shouldn't even cover their own song. They can't even do it as well. They can't play this song live as well in the studio, which is pretty darn interesting, right? You know, this idea of, I was finishing up my second Dio book the other day, the second half of the Dio story, and you know, opining that, you know, the live albums only came later. We never got a live album after Sacred Heart. And it's like, you know, wouldn't have that been a great moment had they put out a double live album? Might have been the greatest live album of all time. Well, the fact of the matter is, and, you know, I remember when we did one of the ZZ Top contrarians talking about how we never got a ZZ Top live album, maybe they were soured by, you know, the reception of the live side of Fandango. But the fact of the matter is, this is a trio in a live situation in the 70s. They might not have got the magic of a Heard It on the X or Nasty Dogs and Funky Kings or even a Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers that they got on the studio version. So maybe, you know, they were smart not to do that because it wouldn't even stand up. So my point with this third slot is that, you know, sometimes a band, even though, you know, we always say, oh, UFO, Strangers in the Night, Thin Lizzy, Live and Dangerous, you know, Kiss Alive, all these bands are way better live than they are in studio. The live album captured the magic of them way better of what they really were and all this kind of stuff. It could work the opposite. And I think this is a good example of that where, you know what, quote, don't even try to cover your own song. You'll never do a better version than you did on the studio version. So that is our take there. And I just wanted to mention, you know, I feel the same way about Down Down, Little Lady, even Too Far Gone on Rockin' All Over the World, which has this really cool, tight little arrangement. It's this rockin' little gem of a tune on Rockin' All Over the World. It's got some 4/4 beat in it. It's got like a little bit of extra percussion and stuff. That band, no band could ever improve on the magic that Quo get on that version of the song, Too Far Gone studio version. And I actually don't feel this way about another great album of theirs, Piledriver. I think there are performances on there that are good, acceptable, but I could see live versions of some of the stuff on there being even better. So even within this one band, it's probably not universal that this would happen. But there are these magic super heavy, like Down Down and Little Lady, and even Bye Bye Johnny, when they cover like the Chuck Berry thing, it's so incredibly powerful and heavy, even though it's boogie rock to a large extent. But those studio versions, just everything about them, the performance, the very mid-rangey tight production, they could never improve on that. And like I say, no other band could ever improve on it either. All right, let's move on to our fourth selection. Take a listen to this. This is Ted Nugent with Paralyzed. Okay, so again, same point. I think with this song, when you listen to the song, there's not much there. So the point is if you covered this song, you would be covering a song that hasn't met you halfway yet. It hasn't given you a ton of incredible flashy riffs to do or whatever. The performance of this song, the amazingness of this song is that on that huge hanging chord or chords, multiple, you know, big hanging chords, that wah-wah effect, the burbly wah in the solo, you know, it's an angry Ted. This is Ted, you know, around the time of his divorce. You know, Ted's a big star, but things are kind of starting to go south. It's got that gorgeous, big, powerful Ted Nugent vocal on it. It's got the, you know, the grouped vocal when you get to the chorus. The drumming's a little bit, and yeah, this I want to mention because this is kind of the point why I wanted to pick Ted Nugent. But so, yes, I don't think you can improve on Ted Nugent's version of Paralyzed. Now, a funny thing happens. There is that, you know, I've talked about this before. There's that live version of Ted doing Paralyzed Can't remember what it is. I didn't research it again this time. I know I've talked about it before, but he actually has improved on even this version live, which is incredible. And there's the Scream Dream. Remember, you talked about Scream Dream before. There's this live version of Scream Dream, which is even better than the studio version. But I wanted to pick Ted because, and I even pulled out some records here. The point with Ted is that I could have used Ted in the what we're going to use for our last thing here, our last slot where I talk about the opposite. You could probably pick songs off of Weekend Warriors, certainly, Cat Scratch Fever, and even Free For All. The riffier, more complicated, flashy songs on those records, the heavier stuff, Out of Control, A Thousand Knives, even Wang Dang Sweet Poontang, the stuff where Meatloaf sings on Free For All, I was never a big fan of that sort of thing, but also because the productions are very kind of undynamic, the Tom Werman productions, very mid-rangey but kind of boxy and small, and the drumming is very behaved. It sounds like Ted really, you know, strangled Cliff to not really drum too much on these things. So this is kind of the opposite, which again we're going to get to on our fifth selection, but I'll mention him here. Ted's got a little bit of both, and to go back to the Paralyzed situation, I totally believe that it would be career suicide. You wouldn't do this anyways, but there would be no point in covering any of the Ted Nugent songs that are on Crave Man or Love Grenade, because you could never improve on those performances and productions, and even frankly vocals with Ted singing. Those versions of those songs like Change My Sex and Aborigine and Raw Dogs and War Hogs, I think it's called, Broadside. There's these just molten killer productions and performances with great rhythm sections, and Ted's guitar just absolutely seething and electric, and Ted's vocal super angry. Great production that, again, totally fit this idea that don't touch these songs. You cannot improve on those versions. All right, let's go to our fifth selection here, fifth and final. Take a listen to this. This is Galactic Cowboys with I Want You. Okay, so the idea here is just the flip side. This is like, go ahead and cover these songs. You can improve upon them. So this is Kiss, I Want You. I've been kind of down lately on Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun lately, because I don't think particularly Kiss performances, Eddie Kramer productions, the singing, the tones, Peter's drumming, anything on these songs are particularly magical in a studio setting, certainly. So here we have Galactic Cowboys, you know, the great Monty Colvin with Ben Huggins and this, you know, the Baby King's X band, right? Doing this cool, groovy, heavy, well-recorded, very electric and lively version of the Kiss song. And it's the coolest thing on the Feel the Rage EP. And frankly, on this EP, they cover Junior's Farm by Paul McCartney and Wings, and it feels kind of pointless. There, I think you have, there's a perfect, you know, the dichotomy of what this episode is about. There you've got a simple, charming enough song, played obviously a little more up-tempo. Paul McCartney and Wings is a weird band. I mean, they are so kind of under-arranged and almost like children's music in a way. But it's a well-written song, but it's a song that particularly, you're not going to improve on by just turning up the guitars on it. So it's not as impressive, whereas this particular Kiss song has a complicated riff and a complicated rhythm, so they can do all those wonderful Galactic Cowboys things to it. And on this front, you know, I think Megadeth's Paranoid is kind of an interesting one where, yeah, you can improve on it. You've got Max Norman production. You've got the firing on all cylinders Megadeth lineup. And they kind of speed it up. It's a little more thrashy. So you know, I guess we're in a realm, this is not that interesting. I mean, it's a realm of, there's tons and tons of great covers out there that are improvements on the old songs. But I thought that was an interesting point, because when they cover Sex Pistols' Problems, you get into a little bit of that. Can you really improve on that original? Can you improve on the magic of the Sex Pistols album and that time? And is it a little pretentious covering a punk band like that? So I think Problems kind of falls flat. It's not as cool. No More Mr. Nice Guy, I think, is just not an ill-advised cover. It's not that exciting a song for a metal band, you know, a couple of generations later to cover. I know it fits in with Dave's personality and all that, and haha and all that kind of thing, but I don't think it's so the successful one of those is Paranoid. You know, I was going to pick Kiss Shock Me as one that you probably could cover and improve upon as well. There's many Kiss songs I think that would fit this. I thought Faith No More's cover of War Pigs, you know, allowed Mike Bordin to do some other interesting things with drumming. And again, this was in an era where their productions were amazing, so they could do this great, great production job on it. The Clash, Police on My Back by The Equals. This is a, you know, we're getting a little off topic because, you know, the first four are really the topic, but there's also the idea that a cover can be done when the original is so obscure and so unknown that it's practically, it's not even a cover. You're practically doing someone else's song the same way you would be covering a singer-songwriter, in a way. Like, hey, here's some songs I wrote. Do you want to do one of them? Well, is that, you know, technically a cover when you do a Diane Warren song, right? So you get that whole situation. And, you know, I looked at lists of favorite, you know, the greatest covers of all time. Jeff Buckley, Hallelujah. Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You. Soft Cell, Tainted Love. Johnny Cash, Hurt. Marvin Gaye, I Heard It Through the Grapevine. Pet Shop Boys, Always on My Mind. Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You. Aretha Franklin, Respect. You know, you think of Jimi Hendrix's All Along the Watchtower. So there are ways where, so now we're in a little bit of a different dimension where a cover could improve on an old song, again, that is so simple, like Bob Dylan songs. They're just kind of songs that are just sitting there with not much performance. It's like somebody else take it and improve upon it. But and then also you can have a situation where you have someone much, much, much more famous. Well, I guess that's sort of what we were talking about before. But even the Johnny Cash thing is kind of interesting, where you have a very, very transformed cover of something else where everybody kind of, haha, oh, how amusing is that? You know, take an industrial song and do a country version or whatever, right? So there's a lot of reasons why, you know, it is a good idea to cover something. But again, I thought the interesting thing with this episode is finding those songs that, you know, the original is more or less untouchable. It can't be improved upon. You're not going to improve upon it. No one's going to be super impressed when you do it. So there you go. If you like this show and want to support future episodes, please go to Ko-fi, rhymeswithnofee.com/MartinPopoff, hit that red support button, and buy me a coffee or a pint. Last week, we had a really short list of people to thank, because I actually did the episode like the next day or 2 days later after it went, and now so we've had a long break. So got a kind of a longer list, so thanks folks for this. We've got Joe Becht at Bel Air Expediting, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Bruce Campbell, Lee Clifford, Kevin Donaldson, Laurie Ferdinands, David Fisher, Ryan Gavalier, Dennis Lawson, Neil Miller, Monty Olson, Augustine Garcia de Preedy, Steve Polari, Steven Samchuk, wow, very, very generous. Take a break, please. CJ Shosha, also very generous. Take a break. John Stuckey, Vinyl Resting Place, and Adam Zanobi. So thank you all very much. I mean, normally the list is between the size of these two, but this one I'm doing at the regular time on the weekend. So there you go. You know where to get the books. I sign them and send them out from the office here. That's the whole idea. That's my main income in any given year is being a mail order guy of my own books. The Angel book is now back in stock. A lot of people have been asking for that. I've still got a few of my stash of the big fancy David Bowie book. So I've got that as well. I know it's kind of expensive, $86 shipping in to anywhere in the U.S. Of course, I'm signing those as well. You know, break open the cellophane, you know, very, very carefully, pull the book out of the big plastic sleeve and get that done. But yeah, most anything in print I have. There's also the artpal.ca. You know, I've been doing those drawings of rock stars. So, and I've got prints of those as well. Just email me and we can talk about those 8.5 by 11 prints. Those I sign in number as well, numbered to 70. So yeah, martinpopoff.ca, martinpopoff.com. Yeah, martinpopoff.ca is where you can actually see most of the portraits. I haven't really kept up that site, but all of the fake ads I've done are there as well, and I've got prints of those also. So there you go. Go play some of these. Let me know what you think. You know, at the Facebook page, are there other songs that you think are untouchable that just can't be improved upon because the magic was too amazing in the first place? Thanks again. Talk to you later.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.